Thoughts and feelings are sometimes seen as very different from each other. One is associated with the brain and intellectual functions, while the other is thought of as coming from the heart or even the gut. But there are many more connections between the two than you might think. Hi, I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller today. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Shyla Mergen is a senior health and sports psychologist at the University of Wisconsin Hospitals and Clinics. Her clinical interests include psychotherapy with patients with mood, anxiety disorders, and adjustment issues. Shyla, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on the show, Judith.
I think it's something that really all of us can benefit from, becoming more aware of those connections between what we're thinking and how we feel as a result. But first, let's talk on the most basic level. When we talk about thoughts or when we talk about feelings, what are we talking about exactly?
Great. That's a great question, Judith. John Milton in Paradise Lost said, "The mind is its own place and can make a heaven of hell or a hell of heaven." And so when we think about thoughts, thoughts are our own internal words, representations of what is occurring around us. It helps us make sense of the world. And at its best, it can help us create new things in our world. It can help us plan for the future, reflect, and process on the past. Emotions, on the other hand, are really our reactions to what is happening both in our environment and also to our internal environment as well, such as our thoughts. So at its best, our thoughts can help create new things. At its worst, it can help us really judge, criticize, dwell on painful experiences, or even become fearful of the future. So developing strategies to manage our thoughts, really mental skills training, what we'll be talking about today, can be so useful to promote a sense of well-being in our life.
And just to make life more enjoyable.
It is. You know, research finds that in the journal Science, they found 47% of the time our mind is lost in thought. We're not engaged at the task at hand. And what was interesting about that study, they found that when our mind is wandering, we report less satisfaction, less happiness. Hmm. So, and in addition, oftentimes many of those thoughts can be negative. And those negative thoughts really impact our mood as well.
So, of course, some thoughts can be these, you know, wonderful breakthrough epiphanies, but I'm guessing the vast majority are pretty mundane thoughts. Do we have a sense of how many thoughts we might have in a day?
It's a great question. You know, studies show that it can be up to 40,000 to 60,000 thoughts a day. So our mind is quite active.
Wow.
And the field of cognitive therapy, which is one of the most widely researched areas of psychology, finds that when we're engaging in negative thinking, and many people do get into those negative thinking patterns, we experience less happiness, we have more stress, and those negative thoughts can even stimulate areas of the brain associated with depression and anxiety.
Well, and with that many thoughts in a day, for 40 to 60,000, that's just mind-boggling. Obviously, we can't be fully conscious and aware of every one of those thoughts because there's just no way we could be. That makes me think that we're probably very, very unaware of how those thoughts then are impacting how we feel about the world around us or about ourselves.
Definitely. And many of those thoughts can be repetitive. They're the same thoughts we thought yesterday, the day before that, the day before that. And so we can get caught into some negative thought loops, kind of a playback of thought after thought that don't necessarily serve us. So starting to become aware of our internal dialogue and really harnessing the power of our thinking can allow us to create the kind of life that we want, or even just the type of experience we want for our day.
I'm guessing that there are thoughts that are, well, we know that there are thoughts that are positive and ones that are negative, and probably some that are neutral, just like, whoa, big step up or something, you know, not putting a value judgment on something. Do we have any sense of the average breakdown between those kinds of thoughts, or does it really depend on the person?
I think it depends on the person, but and it also probably depends on the type of work somebody has done with their thinking. But sometimes we can see that the majority of thoughts can be negative for some people, and that's a great area for them to start working on. I think we want to work with our mind and our thoughts the same way we'd go to the gym to strengthen a muscle, lifting weights. That mental skills training really requires some work and some effort, but the results can be pretty significant and profound for people.
So you said that there are often thoughts that are repeated either from day to day or maybe from hour to hour or maybe even a quicker turnaround than that. I'm guessing that those thoughts have a bigger impact, you know, kind of that drip, drip, drip of water on a stone. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't think it would have an impact, but if it drips long enough, it's going to wear down the stone. I'm guessing those repetitive thoughts are pretty similar to that dripping water.
That's a great analogy. Yeah, and it can really impact our sense of ourselves, our confidence, even our resilience to handle stressful situations. So many of our thoughts can be self-critical about ourselves or even critical or fearful about the future. And we can imagine then our experience of our day or even our belief in ourselves to accomplish a goal, how that might be impacted when we get into those kinds of negative thought patterns.
And you brought up the word beliefs. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really key too, because it seems like if we have those thoughts often enough, they suddenly aren't just thoughts, but they get the status of like a truth, and then mm-hmm. it's a belief. And so if we have enough of the thoughts say that we're really clumsy, and then we focus in every time we stumble or trip, even if anyone would have tripped over, you know, that uneven sidewalk, it's like it just feeds that belief like, oh, you know, of course I tripped on that because I'm such a klutz.
Yeah, exactly. And in the field of psychology, they call that a schema or an overarching view of an area of our life or the world. And those can become self-fulfilling prophecies. So we can also really zero in on those times that we are clumsy and see that as a definitive evidence of that quality. And we can under-attend to those times where we're very graceful right. or elegant.
Right. We don't pay attention to the other 9,000 steps where we didn't trip, but that one yeah. where you almost end up flat on your face
exactly.
is the one that stands out. We're talking with Shyla Mergane. She talks about and thinks about and researches the connections between our thoughts and our feelings, and more importantly, how we can harness that connection to really positively impact how we view ourselves and the rest of the world. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller, and we'd love to have you join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Now, we were just talking about how we focus. We tend to really pay more attention to those negative thoughts. Does it take more positive thoughts to create those positive feelings than it takes negative thoughts to create negative feelings? Do we tend to focus on the negative more?
We do. And there's some research that shows that those negative thoughts can be sticky and we can kind of hold on to them. And it can take even up to a ratio of 3 positive experiences or thoughts to every negative to create that sense of optimal well-being. And I'm also not a fan of always having to be positive. I like to use the word balanced because the goal isn't to become Pollyanna-ish, that everything's a bed of roses and life is just perfect, but really to create that sense of balance and perspective and choose thoughts that really make us feel good as well that we'll talk about today.
One of the things I was thinking about in reading the article, and the article is Can What You Think Affect How You Feel? And we have a link to that on the Facebook page. It's a UW Health article. And you can go to the Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show. And Mueller is M-E-I-L-L-E-R. The Larry Mueller Show on Facebook. As I was reading the article, I started wondering about, you know, there are times when you just kind of feel like you're in a funk. And maybe that's a physical thing. Maybe it's hormonal. But I started wondering if it's not maybe the effect of a pileup of negative thoughts. And it's not specific and it's not, you can't pinpoint it like I'm cranky because of XYZ, but you just kind of feel this general malaise. Could that be an impact of that, those thoughts impacting our feelings that we're not even aware of?
Definitely. And it can be a cascade effect. So let's say something in the morning goes wrong, like you're stuck in traffic and you're going to be late for work. And you think about your automatic response to that. You may engage in some negative thoughts about that, of how horrible it is, how you're going to be late, and maybe even start catastrophizing how you might lose your job. And before you know it, you're completely stressed and you're feeling a lot of distress. And that funk can last with you throughout the day, leading you to be less effective at work. So definitely. But often we're not noticing the thoughts that we're thinking. So beginning to listen to our own internal dialogue, we can start to make some choice about how better to respond. I always say we're not responsible for our first thought. That's that knee-jerk reaction. But we're responsible for the other thoughts after that. And remembering to choose thoughts that make you feel good, that bring a sense of peace.
And is it good to have, or can it be helpful to have some kind of little mantra or, you know, some little phrase that when you feel yourself kind of spiraling into that, oh, of course the train is coming through now because I was already late, and now, you know, and you get into this really negative cycle. Is it good to have a little kind of interrupter that you can throw into that?
Definitely, Judith. I think that's a great point. Anticipating a stressful situation, what is a short phrase that you could say to yourself to get you back on track and feeling good again? It could be something as simple as, huh, this will pass. I know I can get through this. I believe in myself. I can do this. It'll be okay tomorrow. Those short phrases can really bring us back to a sense of perspective and back to our kind of sense of our strength or belief in ourselves.
Even the slightly annoying and definitely overused, it's all good. Might not be the worst thing in a situation.
Right.
We can't come up with something else. Well, we have lots of people who want to join the conversation. And so let's go to the phones. And Ruth in Madison is up first. Hi, Ruth.
Well, I do have a short little phrase. Mine is, if A equals B, then B equals A. The mathematical correctness of that. Because I'm a very religious person, but I had very low self-esteem, and I was always doing for others, but not doing for myself. And then, like about the fourth time I was in counseling for depression, I realized that if the commandment to love thy neighbor as thyself, if A equals B, then B equals A. Because if I only love myself as much as a doormat, then love my neighbor as myself would be to love my neighbor as a doormat, which I clearly wasn't doing. So I had to, if it was going to be mathematically correct, then I had to love myself as much as I loved my neighbor and hold myself in the same esteem as my neighbor. I had to forgive myself as I would forgive my neighbor. So if A equals B, then B equals A.
I think that's a great point, Ruth. Thanks for that, because I think it's really true, and it kind of goes back to at the very beginning of the show, you know, things that we would hear someone saying to another person and think, oh, that's horrible to say. We probably say something very similar to ourselves all the time and don't stop ourselves.
Exactly. And Ruth, it sounds like you've done some great work there, and it's really a powerful testament to the power of working with our thinking, that change starts with us, and by doing for yourself in the same way you would do for others. I always say, would you talk to your best friend or a loved one in the way that you're talking for yourself? And by working with our thoughts and really examining the evidence of some of those automatic thoughts allows us to create some distance from those repetitive thought patterns that don't serve us, so that we have some choice. And that great phrase, A equals B, B equals A, is really a way of reframing something and starting to dispute or counter some of those automatic negative thoughts to choose something that would feel most helpful. So great Ruth work. Keep it up.
Right. And I think, you know, the beauty of Ruth's little formula there is that it's very meaningful to Ruth, and that's what's important. It doesn't have to be something that would work for everyone. It's what really resonates with you and brings you back to that kindness to yourself, like Ruth was saying.
Exactly. Having that mantra or phrase has to feel meaningful, and it has to feel realistic. And so coming up with something short that comes out of your own history or background is really what it takes.
We're talking about how our thoughts can influence how we feel with Shyla Mergane. She's a senior health and sports psychologist at the University of Wisconsin Hospitals and Clinics. Her clinical interests include psychotherapy with patients with mood, anxiety disorders, and adjustment issues. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I hope you'll stay tuned, because at 11:45, we'll talk with a woman who realized that the cult of the bride was really impacting her image of herself in a very negative way. So she stopped looking at herself in mirrors for an entire year. Kirsten Grease is the author of Mirror, Mirror, Off the Wall, How I Learned to Love My Body by Not Looking at It for a Year. I think it's going to be a fascinating conversation, so I hope you'll stay tuned. And I think it's a great follow-up to the conversation we're having right now with Shyla Mergane, talking about how thoughts can influence our feelings. And we were just talking about kind of having a little mantra to bring ourselves back when we start spiraling into negative things. And I was mentioning to Shyla that Kirsten, our next guest's little mantra was, good enough is good enough. And I think that's really, you know, that's the kind of thing, just to remind yourself, you don't have to be perfect. You're, you know, just because you mess up or it seems like life is conspiring against you, it doesn't have to bring you down.
Exactly. And we think about the quality of our thoughts really impact the quality of our day. So those are great examples of some thoughts that helped the author bring herself back to what was most important to her.
And we just heard from Ruth in Madison, who was talking about how she tries to be as kind to herself as she expects herself and holds herself to be to other people. And Monica in Greenfield, I think, has another angle on that. Hi, Monica.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Great program. I was saying to the person that answered that it reminds me of a little mantra that I have. And that got created one night that I went to a small concert and I went to the ladies' room. And there was a young gal, you know, looking at herself in the mirror and fussing with her hair. And I had this feel of telling her, you look so beautiful tonight, but I didn't. Because I thought that it would be kind of awkward. I went, took a seat on my seat, and waited, and it turned out she was the only girl that was playing in the opening band. It was all male and just her. And from that day on, I promised myself I will never hold a positive comment to others or myself.
Wow. And that's great. I mean, you actually saw an opportunity that you wish you had taken advantage of.
Taken.
And Monica, do you feel like you're also good at giving yourself a compliment?
I do. I also grew up very religious, as Ruth did. And once in a while when I was young and I would get bullied or things like that happen, or even adult discords, and people would say things like, you're unbelievable, that is ridiculous, you da-da-da, you are so insecure of yourself. I would think to myself, absolutely not. I am a beautiful child of God or nature. People can turn it into whatever they can. But we all are beautiful, and I have always considered myself a beautiful child of God.
That's a wonderful comment, Monica.
Yeah, Monica, that's fantastic. And the wording you used really affirmed yourself and validated yourself. And by complimenting others, it just gets us in the habit of noticing what somebody is doing well and vocalizing that. And I really appreciated the fact that you were also doing that for yourself and were practicing that. One of my mentors, she always advocated for giving yourself credit when you do a good job. And she would stop and say to herself, great job, just even after it was a small thing, because it creates new pathways in our brain, noticing what is right, what we are doing well, since our minds can so easily focus and get stuck on the negative.
And I think it's interesting, too, because culturally or societally, you know, sometimes it's frowned upon to be, you know, complimenting yourself or, you know, kind of tooting your own horn. But it doesn't necessarily have to be in front of an audience. Well, the most important audience, I should say, is yourself. And so saying it to yourself, you don't have to be out there saying, look how great I look or something, but telling yourself that.
Exactly, Judith. I think that's most important, because what we're talking about is creating our own internal environment that fosters a sense of well-being. So really, it's a private act of just acknowledging, speaking to ourselves kindly, choosing thoughts that feel most helpful, and trying to, what I say, clear out some of those inner pollutants of those weeds, so to speak, of those negative thoughts that are like weeds that don't serve us. So sometimes working with our thinking and disputing negative thoughts, coming up with more balanced thoughts, is helpful. You know, we'll also talk in here of what to do when those negative thoughts persist and are sticky, because sometimes disputing them just makes them grow stronger.
Well,
and
you're actually giving them attention when you're doing battle with them. Well, let's actually, Shiloh, let's move to talking about those really concrete steps that we can do that can help us, now that we have the knowledge that our thoughts can impact our feelings for good or for bad. What are those concrete steps that we can take to become more aware of that connection and really to use it?
That's a great question. And they're really four strategies out of the field of cognitive behavioral and therapy and acceptance and commitment therapy. The first is to not have to believe every thought that we think. They're just thoughts. And they don't have to mean anything. And we can examine the evidence of our thoughts to see, by stepping back, getting some distance, is this a thought that really serves me? Or is this thought something that's creating some unnecessary distress? The second step would be, if we notice those patterns of negative thinking, to stop, interrupt it, and begin to dispute those negative thoughts. A great question to ask yourself is this thought helping? Is it promoting a peace of mind? Or is there a thought that would make me feel better? Then choose a different kind of thought, and maybe saying it over and over can really help reinforce that new pattern of thinking.
Well, and where is this thought coming from? You know, is it based on on actual evidence, or is this me bringing up something from the past that really isn't what's going on? I mean, I think figuring out if this is actually information, or if this is just kind of an errant thought that we're having, might help too.
Exactly. Am I choosing this thought, or is this just a thought that's been passed down to me by society or my family? And choosing the thought that makes us feel good. And as I mentioned, sometimes our thoughts are sticky and they persist. So there can be these irrational, stubborn thoughts. And if we try to struggle with them or change them, it's kind of like putting more wood on a fire. The wood is just going to get stronger. And a way to have a fire burn out is to walk away from it. And we can do this in two ways. One, we can bring our awareness and become really mindful of those things that are in our environment. So those negative thoughts can be there, like gnats on a summer night. We don't have to take them seriously, and we can really focus on something outside of ourselves, like the birds chirping right now, the flowers, or even the experience of drinking a warm cup of coffee. Or we can also focus internally, just bringing our mind back to the breath, and noticing a breath can be like walking away from the fire, can allow those thoughts to really start to dim down.
And so that's especially when they're persistent, like you said, sticky. I think that's a great word for them, sticky thoughts. I could also see, as we're kind of training ourselves to recognize those thoughts and try to interrupt them, I could also see the unfortunate consequence of maybe beating ourselves up a little bit, like, oh, there I go again, having those negative thoughts. And, you know, and then we end up creating a negative thought about the fact that we're having a negative thought. So do you have some, I mean, we talked about little mantras and kind of, you know, little phrases that work for us. But what are some good ways to construct that interruption? Like, what does that interruption look like or sound like?
Yeah, that's a great question. We can say, oh, there I go again. There's my mind going, getting back in that negative thought pattern. Oh, it's just a thought. Let me focus on something in my environment. I don't have to take it so seriously. Yeah, exactly. We don't want to get critical of ourselves for having a negative thought. There's research done out of UCLA. Jeffrey Schwartz studied patients with obsessive compulsive disorder that had a lot of obsessional thoughts, these sticky kind of thoughts of, oh, I better wash my hands, or I shouldn't step on the crack. And what he taught patients was how to just be mindful of their thoughts. So when the thought happened, they like, oh, I have to wash my hands. They just said, oh, there's my brain circuit, that OCD circuit saying, oh, I have to wash my hands. I'll just let that thought be there. I don't have to have it impact my mood or my behavior. What was fascinating about the research was that at the end of studying these present mindfulness, present focus mindfulness experiences, patients not only had a significant diminish in their symptoms, they weren't experiencing them as much and they were less distressing. But what was also exciting is that neuroimaging found that brain changes had happened.
Wow.
And there was the orbital frontal cortex, the core of the OCD circuit, had fallen dramatically compared to what it had been before this more present focus mindfulness training. Mm. So we see research showing that changing our thinking and bringing our focus into the present moment can have significant impacts in developing new pathways in the brain as well from the field of neuroplasticity.
We're talking with Shyla Mirgain about how our thoughts can influence our feelings and how we can use that to create a more positive internal environment for ourselves. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson sitting in for Larry Mueller, and you can join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Gabby Pedriani, our on-air producer, will be happy to get your calls through to us. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. Now, you were describing bringing ourselves into the present moment. Why is that so important for interrupting those negative thought patterns that can then lead to negative feelings?
And that's another great question, because life happens in the here and now. You know, my life is multidimensional, and we can get so absorbed in our thinking that we lose contact with this moment in time. And getting out of our mind and back into our life, whether noticing something in our present environment, or the fourth strategy is just to take action. And taking action specifically towards something that we value, It could be a creative project that we want to work on. It could be spending time with a loved one in a way that feels meaningful or working towards a goal. By taking action, it helps us get out of our mind and really back into our life, because life happens in the present moment. So we need all of our kind of focus and attention and energy here in the moment and responding in the best possible way. We do find peak performance, those optimal performance opportunities tend to happen when we're completely focused here and now.
I hear people talk about that they will replay things in their mind, like how they, you know, some interaction that they had with someone, a conversation, or, you know, whether with someone close to them or a stranger, and they just keep replaying that interaction and how they could have done it better. And, oh, I wish I hadn't have said that. That's got to be exhausting, and, you know, kind of getting into those loops, it seems like, would really have an impact about how you not only view the present, but also anxiety about the future. Like, am I going to be in that situation again? And am I going to mess it up again? And how that would set you up to think about yourself and those situations.
It's a great example of one of those negative loops that we can get stuck in, and think about how much energy or time that takes. And it takes us away from that present moment. And it reminds me of a quote I saw that, you know, do the best you can in the moment. There's no moment of certainty that will arrive. Do the best job and then drop it. And so you can imagine that person ruminating over I should have, could have, would have, and how that could start creating some vulnerability for depression or anxiety, or even starting to isolate socially. So we could imagine somebody getting caught in that loop, how they might be able to drop that and then think about taking action, saying, well, I'm going to go out and interact with somebody in the best possible way.
And how liberating that would feel.
Exactly. Right. Could really free somebody up from some of that negative thought pattern that may not even be true.
Right. Karen in Milwaukee is on the phone and would like to join in. So let's go there. Hi, Karen.
Yes, hi. I was going to ask about this concept of highly sensitive people, and I was doing some reading on something called mirror cell theory. I think it's mirror neurons, and how, you know, some people's brains, let's say, have a lot of them, makes them very sensitive and feeling, and kind of how our brain makeup may have something to do with how we hold on to thoughts or how we feel things, and, you know, if for people like that, it's really important to try to figure out how to figure out what things you're feeling are yours, or, you know what I mean, what things are too overwhelming. And so I just wonder if you knew anything about that concept and, you know, how our biology or makeup has something to do with it.
Great. Thanks for that call, Karen.
Thanks, Karen, for the call. And there is, in recent years, been more awareness of people that are more highly sensitive than others, or intuitive empaths. Sometimes they're talked about, where they do feel things deeply, both internally, but they also can pick up on other people's emotional states. And sometimes people are told as a young child, oh, you're too sensitive, because they feel things so deeply. So, you know, for that type of person, whether it's biological or environmentally created, or a combination of both, once again, really protecting one's internal environment and becoming aware of those types of thoughts that may create distress, working with that type of thinking. But then also, I think some of the mindfulness, present moment practices can also help create that sense of internal calm for themselves. Because if we are really aware of what other people are thinking, we can easily get off center. So we talked about just focusing on the breath, kind of calming the mind, or focusing on something outside of ourselves can help reground us so we feel that sense of stability within us. Great question, Karen.
Thanks for that, Karen. And one question that just came up for me was, as we're trying to interrupt, or first of all, recognize those negative thoughts and then interrupt them, does it make sense to tackle them all at once? Or you know, if we know that a particular area of weakness for us is, you know, thinking badly about our appearance, or thinking that we're not as smart as people around us, or thinking that we're clumsy, you know, is it better to, like, kind of tackle one topic at a time? Or is it better to address any negative thought that comes up, and with the hope that in general, then the number of negative thoughts will go down?
It can be very overwhelming to start to tackle this issue.
It can be exhausting.
Yeah, you're highlighting. And I think we want to start where we start. Pick one area, and this will take some work. You could pick on one area, for example, appearance you mentioned, or work, or even your sense of your future, and try to shift your thinking. With practice, it will change over time. I used the example earlier of going to the gym. You wouldn't expect having great muscle tone after just 1 week of lifting weights on vacation. You would have to keep going to the gym in the same way we'd keep working with our thoughts.
And you know you're going to have really sore muscles at first, just like it's going to feel like a lot of hard work at first.
Exactly. And even paying attention to the thoughts that we think when we first wake up, you know, can be a great area, or the thoughts we think in the shower, and starting to shift those into ones that really best support us can be, you know, have some fun with it. We don't have to take it so seriously, freaking out if, oh, I thought a negative thought. Oh, no. We can say, oh, there it goes again. I'm back in the old pattern. So really reinforce the changes that you are making.
Let's go back to the phones and Jay and Spooner. Hi, Jay.
Hi. I've been listening to the show for a few minutes here, and boy, everything you are saying and talking about really is resonating with me. I'll just share very briefly the story. I've recently lost a very loving relationship. I lost my marriage 5 or 6 years ago now, and I think so much of it had to do with the thought patterns instilled by my parents and my father, who was, you know, abusive, verbally abusive, and when you're told you're not good enough long enough, I think you become that. And even though I had a very successful life in terms of career and family and everything, I always had those negative thoughts in my head, and it wasn't until recently I realized how destructive everything has been. And listening to your show, and I've read some books, Eckhart Tolle, about, living in the moment and so forth, and I'm really on a struggle to start to change that, so I don't keep sabotaging my own life. So I just wanted to say it was really a good topic, and this really hits home.
Well, thanks for that call, Jay. And I wish, you know, we could say that Jay's experience is unusual, but unfortunately, a lot of people do get some pretty negative messages about themselves and their self-worth as children. And, you know, it can be really, really difficult to get past that, and as Jay was saying, to be able to live fully and in a way that makes it possible to have positive relationships later in life.
Exactly. And Jay, thanks for the call. And I really think it takes a lot of courage to begin to notice some of the patterns that have developed within us, some of those sticky thought patterns maybe from childhood. And it does take courage to look at them and to begin to work with them. So I encourage you to give yourself a lot of credit for the changes you are making. And, it took time for those patterns to develop, so it'll take time for them to unravel. But with a little bit of a work and consistency, that you can have the kinds of internal mental states that we want. And when sometimes where people are really struggling, it may be helpful for them to talk to their primary care physician. Mental health professionals can be useful. And there, Jay mentioned reading some books. There are some wonderful self-help books that really delve deeply into this topic and give various exercises to lead us through the process.
Thanks for that, Jay. And I'd just like to add, be kind to yourself because you deserve it. And we have a couple callers who have tips to share, and maybe Jay will find those helpful as well. Harold in Superior is next. Hi, Harold.
Well, good morning.
Hi.
I know you're short on time, so I'll be real quick. Try to be. I fought anger for years and years, and I was just beside myself. I just could not shake it for many valid reasons. And I found that the more forgiving of others I was, the less critical, how much better I felt about myself. And, of course, the converse is always true. And that keeping it simple is important. And if somebody attacks me or is otherwise annoying or has their issues, I just give it ownership. And I say, well, that is their problem, not mine. And if they throw something at me, it just goes right on by. Last thoughts here is, you know, wealth is, peace of mind is wealth. Wealth is peace of mind. Peace of mind is wealth. I don't think there's any more wealth than that. And I guess look at this Jackson gal that's tried to commit suicide. God, and, you know, so my daily is God grant me serenity. And I really do have peace of mind finally after 50 years.
Well, that makes a great point, Harold. Thanks for sharing that. And of course, there's a whole field of research into forgiveness and what it does for the person forgiving, not just the person being forgiven. But I think what's great is that Harold turned that around to how it makes him feel.
Yeah, it was really a practical application. And Harold, as you mentioned, peace of mind is really our greatest asset. So by taking responsibility for what is occurring in our thoughts and in our mind, we can really develop that kind of internal experience that brings peace, and certainly the forgiveness work of letting go of those things that have hurt us or those people who have harmed us, and kind of giving up the hope of a different past can be really liberating and freeing and release us from some of those unwanted and intrusive thoughts that that really are only hurting us. So thanks for sharing your experience, Harold.
Thanks for that. And we had a comment earlier from Leslie in Preston. She said, I always feel like I always felt like I didn't have a lot of willpower, but that my husband did. And I told him that one day, and he said, I don't have willpower. I just make up my own mind. And then Leslie realized that she could do that too. And so that's, you know, she had this belief, and it turned into a belief that she didn't have willpower and had built this up as this is part of who I am. And he was able to help interrupt that for her.
Exactly. And as Leslie is highlighting, what we think impacts how we feel. So by telling herself she had willpower, she started to believe it. And then that also, in return, impacts our actions. So she started acting in a way that demonstrated that quality that she wanted to create within herself.
Well, we have just a minute left, Shyla, and I want to give you a chance to kind of recap, you know, what's the first step that each of us can take to interrupt those negative thoughts, or even focus on creating those positive thoughts that can then influence our feelings?
That our well-being is so tied to our thoughts. And so beginning to observe, notice what we're thinking, choose thoughts that bring that sense of peace or well-being, and those thoughts that don't serve us, think about disputing them, reframing them to something more balanced. And if those thoughts are still there, get out of your mind, back into your life, taking action, or just getting really absorbed in the experience that's happening around you, like just enjoying the beautiful summer day that we're having today.
Great. Shyla Meargain is a senior health and sports psychologist at the University of Wisconsin Hospital and Clinics. Her clinical interests include psychotherapy with folks with mood and anxiety disorders and also adjustment issues. She also deals with sports and all kinds of thoughts and how we can shape those. So I think we have to have you back for that sometime. That would be a fascinating discussion as well.
I'd love that, Judah. Thank you.
Thanks so much for spending time with us. It's been really interesting to learn how much our thoughts can impact our feelings. And I think our next guest would agree wholeheartedly with what Shyla had to say. Coming up next, Kirsten Gries realized that the process of planning her wedding was bringing back a lot of negative body image issues that she dealt with through an eating disorder. In order to interrupt those negative thoughts and the feelings about herself that they were creating, she made a drastic decision. She decided she wouldn't look at herself in the mirror for an entire year. It's a really fascinating story, and it's coming up next right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.